This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 35, Sacrifices and Choices. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, the coaches get together again. This time we talk about how sacrifice is important to cricket, as are the choices everyone makes to be a good team player. Then there are questions about a leg spinner who chucks it and how you practice to score a century. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's a 376th version of this that we're doing, so we're just about getting the hang of it now. It's your guide to better cricket, of course. We're going to spend half an hour or so helping you to improve your game, or maybe to improve the game of others if you're a coach. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Gareth. How's it going?
All good, thank you. All good.
Good. You've been, I noticed on Twitter the other day that you've been doing some planning with some of your guys for the coming year.
Yeah, very much in that mode. Finishing that by the end of this week, which is good because it does my head in as much as it probably does theirs in. But it's a vital part of the year to get it right, because then that means that we know exactly what we're trying to attack in the period up to Christmas. And when we break up for Christmas, we're off to Mumbai to play seven games out there for 49 cricketers. So a lot of planning with the view to sort of testing ourselves once we get to Mumbai.
Fantastic. So it's a bit of time investment now. It's going to have a good payoff later on.
Yeah, well, that's what you do it, really. And I have to say, as a cricket coach, it likes to throw balls, hit balls, and get involved with trying to develop the cricketer in a sort of, in a technical way. It's not something that comes naturally to me to type on a word processor and all of that. But it is an important part. And if we get this bit right, then it helps the next phase.
Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How are you at planning?
Yeah, okay. Again, much in the same old as Gareth. I'd rather be out there doing stuff, getting on with it. But it's an important part, and it's something that having those plans and reviews and sitting down and discussing and actually documenting things is an important part of the whole process. So, yeah, it's something that needs to be done. I've been doing a bit of it. I had a bit more time, probably free in the summer than Gareth, I think. So, I managed to get a little bit of it done then. We'll be starting in about 4 weeks' time. We'll be starting cricket again, so it will be all up and running, ready to go then, which will be good to get back on with it.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a balance every coach has to find. I think it's a good role for the coach to have, to sort of temper that natural instinct of players to go, it's like, right, I'm just going to hit some balls, I'm just going to bowl some balls. Sometimes you need to do that, but there are other times when you need to think longer term or even medium term, and that's when that idea of planning comes into place nicely. So it's a really important job for a coach to be able to do. But just changing tack slightly, something that I saw this week, or I think a lot of people saw this week actually, which was not directly cricket related, but it was sport related, of course, and that was the Brownlee brothers, the triathletes, who in an amazing display of a sportsmanship this year, this week, one of the Brownlees was not going to be able to make it over the line. He'd completely hit the wall. He was going to collapse, and he wasn't going to make it over the line. And his brother grabbed him and helped him get over the line to finish second. In fact, he even sacrificed a second place to let him get over the line, fall over the line himself. So, well, first of all, what an amazing story and an amazing example of sportsmanship. But it did make me start thinking about sportsmanship, and particularly in cricket, as we're talking about cricket here. And the idea of sacrificing your personal success to help others, to help the team, to help the group, and how important that is in cricket. And how much it's one of those things that people say, but it doesn't always come through in reality. So how I wanted to get your views on that. How important is that idea of sacrificing personal success to help the wider group in a cricket context?
Well, I think it's huge in a team sport. I think it's very important, and we see examples of it all of the time, with things like people giving each other throwdowns, people trying to develop each other's games in fielding practices, people having conversations about what they see in somebody else's game. These are things that we encourage as coaches, and most good teams, they're pretty prevalent, that sort of stuff. I think the interesting thing, or there's lots of interesting things that came out of that footage and the subsequent discussions that people are having all over the place about Jonathan and Alistair Branley, you know, is that they're brothers, so obviously they're sort of their own team as well. They certainly compete against each other, but they are very much a sub team and sharing each other's successes significantly. And what was brilliant was to see that immediate reaction, wasn't it, when Alistair came round the corner and saw his brother. Obviously, he knew he was in front, but saw him really struggling, and it was an instantaneous reaction just to pick him up and drag him along, really, which was, you know, something that possibly was less cognitive, less conscious decision than maybe we have in cricket teams, because, you know, they're brothers, they've trained together all their lives, they've lived with each other all of their lives. But one of the people that I worked under with England was guy Peter Moores, fantastic coach, but he always used to talk about being a band of brothers as a group of teammates, and I think the best example under his reign that we had where we got that band of brothers thing right was when we went to Sri Lanka and played Sri Lanka in one day cricket over in their backyard at the hottest time of the year, and we did got a terrible record over in that neck of the woods. And he really drove this band of brothers thing, where that type of decision that Alistair made to help Johnny would become more of an instinctive thing rather than let's make a decision on this. And it worked really well. Now, it's not very easy for us to sustain that, I suppose, that band of brothers approach, because it does take a lot of energy. But, you know, it is achievable, I think, in the short term. And if you get it in the short term, then you can create a bit of a culture around it. But often that will be a cognitive decision every time rather than that instinctive brotherly one that we saw on the television the other day.
There is an argument, isn't there, Lavers, that especially batting-wise, if you know the batsman focuses on his own game so much that it's almost selfish and says, well, look, you know, if I go out today and score 100, you know, we're going to win the match. So, you know, who cares what else happens? As long as I do my thing, it's, you know, it's fine. And it's almost like the selfishness sometimes is contributing to the team anyway. So who cares whether you're a selfish player or a selfless player?
Yeah, I think that's something that's definitely been true in the past, is that, and that's quite a common phrase, if I can score 100, or if an individual can score 100, then the team's going to win. And that's had its relevance in the past. I'd start to question if that still has as much relevance now, simply because the numbers are changing. And if someone scores 100, does that mean the team scores 200, 250? That's quite clearly not a winning score these days. And obviously, that'll depend on the conditions slightly, but in the past, when going back 10, 15 years, that would have been a really competitive score and you would have backed yourself to defend it. And these days, things are different, and maybe the rule has to be changed to 150 or whatever it might be. So, having that single-mindedness can be can have a positive impact on the team, even though it's kind of thinking individually about yourself and your performance. But ultimately, we, as batters, we're trying to focus on our performance. And as long as we're aiming it in the right direction and that will have a positive impact on the team, then it'll work well. It happens a little bit with bowlers sometimes as well, when it's probably less noted, but you can get some people who are willing to play in a particular mould. And I can think about a couple of bowlers that I would know who would always revert to the type of hitting back of length over and over and over again, which invariably might be a little bit more of a defensive method, and it might not threaten, but it might not create as many opportunities for the batters to necessarily score, and it can control the pace or the tempo of the batter's innings a little bit better, certainly at schoolboy level here. But again, it comes down to understanding your role. If your role is to control, then that's fine. Whereas if you're needed to take wickets, then you've got to be aware that you've got to go and play that role. You've got to pitch the ball up a bit. You've got to take a bit more of a gamble. So we talk about defining roles quite a lot, and that's a really important thing, when it's especially with individuals who may have that kind of single-minded streak about how they're going to play the game. I think if you're a big run scorer in a winning side, then you're going to get a lot more noticed than maybe who's on the wrong end of results a lot more. So work for the team as much as you can, and your personal rewards will definitely come.
And it's actually very rare in cricket that you have to have some kind of sacrifice in order for the team to win. That situation doesn't happen very often anyway, does it? So it's, I suppose in cricket, it's more about doing things, as you said, Gareth, earlier on, giving someone throwdowns or helping someone with some advice or staying a bit longer at the end of practice because you saw one of the bowlers didn't get much of a bat, and so you want to give him, you know, you want to throw him a few or bowl him a few at the end. Things like that, which aren't necessarily impacting on your influence on the game, but you can still do those things. And you don't often see that situation where you have to give something up in order for the team to win.
I suppose it's a difference between a choice and a sacrifice, isn't it? You know, we're looking at choices here, and helping somebody else is more of a choice. I suppose the sacrifice would maybe be having a conversation with somebody on the flattest wicket in the world when you're chasing down a score, and having a conversation with a coach or a captain and saying, do you know what, I think actually that for the team and for us to have a better chance of winning, I might need to slide down a position and this guy might need to go up. You know, that's a sacrifice, being run out and running yourself out to keep the guy who's on 90 odd not out, is likely to win the game. There's a bit of confusion, and you sacrificing your wicket is something that you know, we could say is a sacrifice. But in most cases, particularly around the development of cricketers, you're looking at choices rather than sacrifices. And the other thing I would say around sportsmanship is that cricket, I reckon, is getting pretty good at the whole sportsmanship thing. And the reason why I say that is it takes a pretty extreme case nowadays, particularly on television, with all those cameras around, for somebody to be criticised for not being a good sportsman. And, you know, I think all that scrutiny that we have with cameras and various other things is really lending itself to that, and it's having a more positive effect going down the playing levels. It's fantastic. Nowadays, I see many more people, when somebody's got 100 and played really well, I see many more of the young kids around the country going up to that batter in the opposition team and shaking their hand as they walk off or congratulating them on getting 100 than I saw when I was certainly playing. And that comes from the likes of, you know, Brendan McCullum and some of the leaders around the world that have really pushed to recognise people's achievements and congratulate them rather than sort of belittling them or you know, ignoring their achievements against their team.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. Honesty is one of the most important parts of leadership.
Yes.
Second question. Young bowlers should be allowed to bowl more than 10 overs in 50-over cricket.
No.
No.
Third question. Pink balls are the future.
Yes.
Yes.
And now it's time for the mailbag on the show. A couple of questions that have been sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision website. And we're going to do our best to answer those questions in detail. And whether we do that correctly or not, then we pick a winner from those two questions, which wins the prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you're thinking you might want to do that, then you can send in your question to us for a future show by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or getting in touch with us through social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. And the first question comes from Atulit, and Atulit says, I'm a leg spinner and I've been practicing it for about 2 years. I'm 15 years old. My biggest challenge at the moment is to prevent my elbow from bending when I bowl. It is very rare to see a leggy chucking, but I seem to have this problem. Most of the time, I'm not even aware of it. I'd really appreciate if you advised me on how to stop this. So, have you ever seen a leggy with a bit of a kink in his arm before?
He's absolutely spot on. It's far less obvious. It's far less out there to see this happening. And in fact, I've not seen that happen. But I am aware that it has happened in other environments. And to me, it's really difficult to throw it as a leggy, because ultimately your muscle chains and your bone rotations are going in, which actually sort of straightens the arm rather than opens it up. But where we do see it in bowling generally is, if you can imagine that your bowling arm is producing a big circle before it releases the ball. When that bowling arm gets to the bottom of that circle, prior to going up and over the top, when we see people that have got their palm facing upwards as they're starting that bowling circle, you will notice, and if you do it yourselves, listening to the podcast, if you do it yourselves, you'll notice as you point your palm upwards, you'll get what we call a carry angle or a bend in the arm. Now, most leg spinners, when they reach forward and go into their bowling circle, will actually reach forward and their hands will, the back of the hand will face the sky rather than the palm facing the sky. So that's where that's coming from, I should imagine. Without seeing video footage, obviously, it's really difficult for me to completely confirm that. But that's the most common thing in bowling, is when the arm gets to the bottom or towards the bottom of the bowling circle, actually the palm is facing upwards rather than the back of the hand facing upwards to the sky. So have a look at that, and the best way to do it, get hold of a phone, get hold of a camera, video yourself from the side, making sure that it's the open side so they can see your chest, not your back, because obviously your body will probably obscure your bowling arm if you're taking it from sideways on with the camera behind pointing towards the back of the bowler, and you'll get a really good view. If it's not that, then send that bit of footage in, and maybe some from front on as well, and myself and Sam will have a look at it. But for me, that's the main cause of throwing, I suppose, in bowling, but it is not particularly common with leg spinners.
Levis, have you ever worked with anyone directly with this problem?
I've probably seen two or three, but that is kind of over a period of a long time. So it's not a common thing at all. The two that stick in my mind that I can picture still, one was very much a duck down, Paul Adams, head to the floor, which is effectively wrist spin. It's the same thing. And he was bending to try and his arm would bend to try and get around his head. Obviously, when you duck that head down, it kind of gets in the way, and that's when you create a little bit of a tangle with your arms, and you try to get in slightly different positions to the orthodox leg spinner. And one guy there had created a bent elbow to try and get his arm rotating around his head when his head was physically in the way. Another one was almost the opposite, where it was quite open. So he wasn't adopting that classic side on leg spinner position. He would be a little bit more open to the midway or even beyond the midway. And as a result of that, when he lifted his arm, when his arm came over the top, or when his shoulders would rotate up and over, his shoulders would stay pretty flat. And the best description I can give it is, instead of the bowling arm coming up and over the top, it would almost come through somewhere between the shoulder and the top of that arc. So he'd almost bowl through and he'd have a bend and extension. So yeah, two different types there. Again, both of them were down to actually poor alignment. So one of them being way too open, and the other one was being closed off with his feet, hips and shoulders. So those two were a result of that. So check that out again. But there aren't a lot of occurrences of this, as we've already said. So it's not like a particularly common incidence that we can point to and say, well, this is what happens usually, because we've seen this happen a lot it is something that's pretty unusual. So yeah, number one method would be get on the camera and start looking at where or why that might be happening if you can. So get your phone out, as Gareth has said, send it in to us, happy to have a look at any time, and offer any guidance we can.
Okay, next question is from Robin, and Robin has got a pretty direct question, but it's quite an interesting one. Robin says, how do I score a century in a match? What practice sessions should I do? So he's got a goal. He wants to get to that magical three figures, and he wants to know how he should practice it. That's you don't normally hear that, so I thought it'd definitely be worth discussing. What do we think?
Well, there's obviously loads of starting points on this, isn't it? You know, your technique and all of this malarkey has a huge bearing on whether you are capable of scoring 100. You know, I've played with a lot of cricketers that are very capable of scoring hundreds from a technical point of view, and not all of them have scored hundreds. So for me, I would say the biggest thing you can take into nets in particular is trying to build an innings, trying to work out what your tempo is, trying to work out your game and be aware, because the guys that repeat the ability to score hundreds, and nowadays, as Sam alluded to earlier in the show, big hundreds, you know, daddy hundreds, 200s, 300s, are the guys that are most aware about their game, most understanding of how their game fits within a cricket match, their best shots, which aren't their best shots. And that's really been built up over net sessions, where they've been incredibly disciplined about what they're doing. Now, somebody like Hashim Amla will bat for 2.5 hours in a net session, but not all of us had the opportunity, or the sheer amount of bowlers that can do that, can produce number enough balls for us to do that. But what we can do is we can be really specific about what we're working on when we walk into the pitch. And a lot of the time when I'm working with young players, it's about really managing those first 20 balls, because most dismissals occur, or most chances are given in the first 20 balls. So virtually every time you go into a net, unless you're specifically targeting trying to whack it or to score really fast straight away, most of the time you can practice that pretty much every time you go to the wicket in the net. But I don't see enough people doing that. They're just people go in there and have a hit, as you said earlier, David. But if you go in there and say, right, I'm going to judge my success today on how I go about my first 20 balls, then you'll be practicing the thing that's going to happen to you most often when you step into the crease and when you bat out in the middle. Because generally, unless you're a lower order player or you're always coming in with only a few balls to go, most batters get the opportunity to get that first 20 ball rights more often than not. So that'll be my starting point. And then really, you know, you've got different ways of going about it. Some people chunk down, don't they? They go into working in 10 run blocks to get themselves up to 100. Other people don't operate like that. So, you know, Kevin Peterson's of this world wouldn't have operated. They'd just go about their business how in a sort of organised but not overly structured fashion like that. So to me, the starting point is having the ability to last the first 20 balls and manage those, because we get that opportunity heck of a lot as a top order batter. I assume you're a top order batter because you're talking about getting hundreds. So that would be my starting point. Then you can build on things like, you know, being able to work under pressure, because that's going to happen. Fatigue is something that affects people that score hundreds. So the guys like Alistair Cook, who are immensely fit, are able to battle fatigues. Fitness comes into play, which can be practiced in a gym. It can be practiced on a road doing your running. It can be practiced in net sessions, where you push yourself hard between the wickets and net sessions and try and replicate that fatigue and the pressure that comes along with fatigue. There are so many different things. But to me, using your nets as best as you possibly can, specifically trying to build up your game, your awareness of your game, will be the difference between you being somebody who aspires to get hundreds and a guy who knows how to score hundreds.
Fitness-wise, is there anything specific you can do fitness-wise that's going to help you improve your chance of getting through to the 100 without getting gassed on, you know?
Oh yeah, I think about the activities you're doing throughout your 100. First of all, you've got a lot of repeated sprint work, and then you've got a lot of repeated power work, effectively, and body control when it comes to actually swinging the bat and trying to hit the ball out of the park.
the videos of Alistair Cook and the fitness testing from England have been put on Sky Sports any number of times, and it's no surprise that the guy who has scored more runs than anyone is also the guy who wins the yo-yo test every time they do it. And that's a guy who's now been playing cricket international level for 10 years, and he's got young 20, 21, 22, 23 year olds from the Lions and the main squad in and around him, but he's still beating them because he knows his main thing isn't smashing boundaries, and it isn't doing anything that's incredibly fancy. It's doing the basics extremely well. So can he keep the ball out? Can he put it into a gap? And can he run all day? He can do all those three things more often than not. So as a result, he scored a hell of a lot of runs. So in terms of pushing yourself, making as much of your physical training as specific as you can to what you're trying to achieve, and a little simple things like making sure that you have a running element to your training sessions and a fatigue, and that can be in your batting net, or it can be away from your batting net, or you might want to alternate or combine the two, so that sometimes you're practicing those sprints solely as sprint work, where you can work on that speed and change your direction, and you can really do it as a powerful high speed event. And sometimes it might be something that you're going to try and do within a net over a period of time. And if you're going to be lucky enough to face 200, 300 balls in a net like an Amla would, as Gareth alluded to earlier on, then that's fantastic. In reality, you might be thinking 50, 60 balls. So can we be doing something very simple, like can we be running a two as hard as you can every second or every third ball? Or can you make up something that's going to be mirroring the type of performance you're going to put in? Everyone's slightly different. We've done nets before where we've had medicine balls in there, so we've tried to have an additional power output. So people are having to work harder on maintaining their power throughout an innings as they go along. So there's different ways you can think about it, but just look at the key basics of what you're doing. There's an element of power, which is coming from swinging your bat, and there's an element of that repetitive interval style activity, which is you running up and down. And if those two go hand in hand and you're pretty good at them, you hopefully find that your ability to maintain technique, your ability to make good decisions, your ability to get from 0 to 100 is hopefully going to be made that a little bit easier.
And also, one thing that we get asked all the time is, what kind of training can I do on my own? You know, I haven't got anyone else who's going to have a net with me today. What can I do? Well, getting fitter is a great thing that you can do on your own. You know, you don't need any specific equipment. You don't need anyone to be around. You can just use your body weight. You can run. You can do sprints. You can jog. You can do so many different things that's going to improve your fitness. And as you said, Lavers, that has a direct comeback on your ability to score big runs. And that's got to be a good use of your time.
And here's another one as well about that independent practice. Is a lot of the guys that have scored more hundreds than anybody else, say, in Test cricket, if you talk to them about what they did when they were kids, they were constantly playing Test cricket in their heads when they were just doing mundane practice. So they would find a wall and throw a ball up against it, receive the ball back off the wall. But all of the time, they're playing against the Test players of that day. So it might be somebody who's 20 years older than them, if they're at the age of 7 or 8, and they're the superstar of the day. But this kid puts himself into that space where he's facing that bowler. He's got these faces of modern-day players around him. But he's creating that, and that doesn't need a coach. That needs a brick wall. That needs a surface of some sort. Doesn't even have to be that good a surface. It needs a tennis ball, and it needs a stick of some sort. And most of the guys who now we know as being the most successful Test players of all time, if you talk to them, they talk to you about their informative practice that they did years ago. But how specific in their mind was it?
And that is the end of the show for another week. Just before we leave, we are going to decide on the winner of the competition. Of course, the prize is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer were Achilit's question about a leg spinner who throws it, and Robin's question about scoring hundreds. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Well, I'm going to go with the batting one, actually, because whilst it's a really simple question, I think it's absolutely fantastic from Robin. And also, the leg spin question, I reckon there's going to be a follow-up to that. We've certainly asked for a follow-up to it, so yeah. I might assess that in future weeks. So this week, it's Robin.
Congratulations, Robin. And yeah, it's great to have a goal, isn't it? If your goal is to make it to three figures, what a great motivation to go and get training and do more and work harder and work on your fitness and do all that stuff, which is really good. But Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they wanted to send in their question to us, how could they get in touch with the show?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203-239-7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, social media, as I promised you earlier. Our Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, pretty easy. And our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. If you want to listen to the show regularly every week, you can subscribe by going to your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, finding us in there and tapping on that subscribe button. It's free, it comes out every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, listen to old shows, or generally have a wander around our website, it's over at pitchvision.com/academy, and click on the podcast link for all the old podcasts there. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Labours.
Cheers, fellas.
Cheers, guys.
stressy. Brilliant.
Yeah, in terms of, you've got to remind people that. Like that what their job is serving the clubs, and if the clubs don't want it, then the clubs don't do it. It's pretty simple. Just need to remember what their job is in terms of a committee. They're there to serve the league and the players, aren't they? And if players and all the clubs are saying one thing, then go with it. This is nice.
Musical interlude for you, lads.
Goodness, yeah, really, what's nice, this?
just found a nice little jazz bar.
Yeah, just having a little walk along. A bit of Millfield jazz.
That is going in the